I'd like to propose a toast.
Hello and welcome to Before Brunch. I'm Megan Cassidy.
And I'm Cassie Delaney.
And we are your flaky celebrity news, gossip, arts, culture podcast. We go live on any given Sunday.
At any time.
At a time of our choosing on that given week.
Mm-hmm. Once a year, sometimes twice.
Yeah. I do think this time I feel that we are going to come back. Like, this isn't an official season. We'll probably just call this a little special episode because I think the Agatha Christie trial warrants a special episode.
Oh, absolutely. We had to do it. Even though I'm in Rome, you're in Waterford, just post-COVID, can we say that?
I'm just trailing off the end of my COVID experience. So I have had to stay put. And on that note, we apologize for any audio quality issues this week. I don't have a USB mic. Okay.
Megan, how have you been?
I don't want to do life updates. I don't want to depress everyone.
Okay, we'll just get straight into it then. It's we're just coming back to you without any sort of explanation, no reasoning whatsoever, to dump this Agatha Christie episode on you. We're not going to talk about ourselves or each other. We're just going to get straight into the court case. Where are we? It is May 14th. What's the latest?
Okay. Oh, I love that, Cassie. Yeah, no kissing. Rebecca Vardy has taken Colleen Rooney to court, to the High Court in London, on a charge of defamation. The original accuser was Colleen Rooney back in 2019. She suspected that someone was leaking stories about her to the Sun newspaper, and she launched a 5-month, which the patience just astounds me, a 5-month social media investigation into who in her private circle was leaking these stories to the Sun. She got a gut instinct that it was Rebecca Vardy, and she went to Twitter in 2019 accusing Rebecca of the same. In 2020, it was announced that Rebecca was taking Colleen to court to accuse her of defamation. I got some advice from a good pal of mine who is a media lawyer. He is a lawyer and has a lot of experience in media law. So this is a civil dispute. It's not a criminal prosecution. It won't be tried. There'll be no police officers involved. It's not brought by the state. It's brought by Rebecca Vardy, the individual. The burden of proof is now on Colleen Rooney to prove that what she said about Rebecca was true. So Vardy needs to prove that Colleen's post tends to lower her in the estimation of right-thinking members of society generally and is about her. And Colleen needs to prove, well, you know, it was true what I said, or it's in the public interest that this comes out. So that's where we're at. The trial started earlier this week. There's a 6-day trial. We've seen a lot of Rebecca Vardy's cross-examination. Colleen, I think, was cross-examined yesterday. And we'll have a result then later. I think the trial ends in the next couple of days and we'll have a result following that. So that's kind of a whistle stop tour of where we're at. What's so interesting about this case, I think, is what it shows about how tabloid culture has changed, how social media has impacted how tabloid culture has changed, how the British tabloids are an entity unto themselves and operate like no one else. But it's also, there are interesting discussion points about celebrity and celebrity friendship and, you know, who you let into your private circle, and certainly the machinations of fame and what the currency is, and the currency is stories.
That's it. And I think the interesting thing, that the thing that's uncomfortable to watch about this, it's like, you know, they say, don't meet your heroes. It's like when you meet people in unexpected places unexpectedly and you see a different side to them. So we're really seeing this human, messy, gossipy side to these, you know, but these people that are high profile. And with that, then, as you say, exposes how tabloids work and realizing that it's all a game. They're selling stories about each other. And the worrying thing is that the tabloids don't even care whether they're true or not. There's no validation process behind it whatsoever. They're sticking stories up there that are being sent in from other, you know, people in the inner circle or people adjacent to the inner circle. And it seems they seem to have very little consequence. I think with this trial, I think the difficult thing with the defamation case, and you can see it now with the other celebrity trial that's going on between, you know, I really don't like calling that a celebrity trial, but the case that's going on between Johnny Depp and Amber Heard. Johnny Depp has sued Amber Heard. Amber Heard countersuing Johnny Depp. With defamation, the greatest defense of defamation is the truth. Okay. So in both of these trials, someone is sitting down and trying to determine what is the definitive truth of the matter. But it's messy. And there is no clear good guy, bad guy in either of these cases. In the Rebecca Vardy versus Colleen Rooney trial, you know, it's becoming more and more clear that it may have been Rebecca Vardy's advisor, manager, assistant, whatever we want to call her, Caroline, that had access to the account that was leaking stories. But it seems that Rebecca Vardy was complicit in that.
Yeah, and it's a great point about defamation and how messy it gets and what comes up during these proceedings. And you wonder why anyone would ever bring a defamation case. Because in defamation, the burden of proof is on the person who's accused, so Colleen, you would think, God, why don't people bring defamation cases all the time? You're very likely to win a defamation case when you bring it to court because that burden of proof is shifted. But on the flip side, the reason people don't bring these defamation court cases very often is when you bring a case like this, it is a full license to destroy your reputation from the cross-examination 100%. Side. And that's actually the goal, is to say, is to bring up whatever you can to say Rebecca Vardy is the type of person that would leak a story to the Sun. So Rebecca Vardy has put herself in an incredibly vulnerable position. We've already seen what's come out about poor Peter Andre, who's been dragged into this, and his sexual equipment. Or lack thereof. So it gets really, really messy. And we've got two very different individuals here going head to head. And I think that's what's really interesting as well, is their relationships with the press and how different they are. Colleen is, her barrister is David Sherborne, who was actually Meghan Markle's barrister when she sued the Mail on Sunday and the Associated Papers for copyright infringement when they published a letter that she had written to her dad. So it's the same barrister. He's got a lot of experience with the British tabloids. And Colleen and Meghan's relationship with the British tabloids is there are a lot of similarities in that. Remember, Colleen Rooney became famous when she was 16 years old. Mm-hmm. She was never a quote unquote jersey puller. She was never a wag wannabe. She was going out with Wayne Rooney, a former England player turned Derby County manager. She was going out with him since they were 16. They had met when they were 12. She was a schoolgirl when the tabloids started chasing her. And there was this huge interest in her private life. She was one of the original wags without ever having aspired, without ever having aspired to be a wag.
Yeah, I mean, she wasn't to know the heights that went. I mean, obviously, Wayne Rooney was a talented player when he was younger, but she wasn't to know when she met him when she was 12 what he was going to become. It was exactly a symptom of falling in love with a football player.
Yeah. And she has been victim of, you know, long lens photography, where the camera is capturing photos of her in bikinis through bushes, and then, you know, she might have had a sandwich and they're saying, oh, she's pregnant. That's her experience of the press. Whereas Rebecca Vardy, it would seem, when you zoom out and look at it on a macro level, has chased fame and chased the press and fostered a relationship with the press to her advantage. And that is what's most interesting about this, is it uncovers how the press works, how transactional it is, and the value of a story. If you're a Rebecca Vardy, who's maybe a C-list wag, so she's married to Jamie Vardy, he's a Leicester City player, she's got a lot more to gain from courting the tabloids than Colleen Rooney would. And it seems like she has used that currency and used her access to Colleen Rooney on a number of different occasions to gain favour with the press. And she herself, her agent, Caroline Watt, and a journalist at The Sun, Andy Halls, have a long-standing relationship. They regularly communicate. And it has been proven that Vardy has leaked stories to Andy Hall about people in her circle. And there are text exchanges as such.
We're at the point now where they're saying, look, all of the evidence is circumstantial. The sting operation, while incredibly impressive and gave us the greatest Twitter statement of all time, it's Rebecca Vardy's account. It is all circumstantial. And because, you know, they cannot prove definitively that it was Rebecca, even though it seems very clear that she was complicit. And we all know she was complicit in the eyes of the law. We cannot definitively state that she is 100% responsible for this. She's pinning it all on Caroline. And even in whilst being examined, and this is the thing that I struggle with these trials, like, are they not prepared before they go on the stand? Because yesterday, you know, Colleen was like, well, I believe it's Rebecca. And then, you know, cross-examination made a point, well, like, you know, you could believe that Derbyshire are going to win the league next year, and doesn't seem likely. So they're kind of making them look foolish, and it's their own ill preparedness. It's the same with Amber Heard and Johnny Depp on stand as well. There's been a lot of times where they've, like, you know, snookered themselves and really walked themselves into a situation where they're exposing themselves to not be this ethereal, magical being. Instead, they are human. They're human.
Yeah.
And it, like, and it's so uncomfortable to watch. It reminds me of the time I met Miley Cyrus once in Brown Thomas accidentally. She was around shopping. They closed the store, didn't realize I was there. And she was very rude and very short. And I was like, I can never see Miley Cyrus as anything other than what I thought was a small child wandering through BT2. So, you know, I don't understand why they have done this to themselves. Because, like you said, there is no way in a defamation case that you can, you know, restore your reputation. It's further damage on both accounts. It's further damage.
And it's funny because Rebecca's position now is, I'm not doing this for the money. I'm doing it to restore my reputation. But in a bid to restore her reputation, we're getting all this access to her private DMs, her private WhatsApps, like you said, things that just make them so human, so real. Like, there was one text exchange between Rebecca Vardy and her agent, Caroline Watt, who isn't testifying because she's been deemed unfit to do so. But back a few years ago, Rebecca sent her a text about Danny Drinkwater, who is a footballer in their circle, who was arrested eventually and accused of drink driving. She sent Watt a text, story, ... or ellipsis, and ellipses are very important in this story. Story, ... Danny Drinkwater arrested, crashed his car drunk with two girls in it, both in hospital, one with broken ribs, kiss, right? Caroline Watt obviously comes back, asks for more information. Where did you learn this? Clarifying the details about it, Vardy then says, I'm paying for this, kiss. So these are the kind of messages and the kind of relationship that we're now privy to, which we, that surprises me. And it's something that Colleen said yesterday on the stand is, I know how this works. And when I was seeing these stories leaked about me, I know the relationship that some of my friends have with the press. I know, you know, how these stories travel and land in the hands of journalists. And I had an instinct that this was Rebecca Vardy. And you have to admire her instincts. Like, it seems circumstantially that she was correct. And, you know, that is how Rebecca Vardy and Caroline Watt are operating. But in the interim, they've lost all the evidence. And I love David Sherburn's quote, it's been a catalogue of unfortunate events. Caroline Watt's phone fell into the North Sea.
Was famously filming a coastline. You know when someone just says the same thing over and over again and you know they're lying. So what were you doing? Filming a coastline. Filming a coastline.
Filming the Scottish, the coastline.
Yeah.
And then while Rebecca was exporting the WhatsApps, because we know WhatsApps are end-to-end encrypted, and there's two copies. There's one on the sender's phone and one on the receiver's phone. As Rebecca was exporting her WhatsApp chat, something very odd happened and they were all deleted. It's just so odd. Because this is civil, you can't go after someone for destroying the evidence as you would maybe in a criminal investigation. You certainly would in a criminal investigation. So there's nothing Colleen can do. The evidence is gone. She actually doesn't have a shred of evidence, despite all of this that's coming out about Rebecca's character. But as you said, it's not about the money. It's, and if this is costing them, I think it's £3 million or more, they'll probably be awarded something paltry, like as we saw in the Katie Hopkins defamation case, when it's deemed that, you know, you've wasted court time, it's a trivial matter, damages are often, they could get, you know, Rebecca Vardy could get a pound.
I hope she does. It really isn't about the money, though. And I think for Colleen, it's about exposing how the system works. She probably is at least smart enough to know that this is not going to end in the way that she wants it to end. But it is exposing the tabloids, the relationships, and saying, I'm not standing for this anymore. Like, fuck this shit. I don't want my friends having this relationship with the press. And also exposing the issues with the press. You know, we've both worked as journalists in the past, covering a lot of that kind of celebrity news beat stuff. But it is considered really unethical to pay someone for a story because it influences the story and it influences the information. Shouldn't even be paying. You don't even generally pay interviewees. You know, you try and cover their travel expenses and things like that. But the idea at the core of the principles of journalism and the code of conduct is that payment for stories influences the truth. And you cannot do that because your role as a journalist is to tell the truth, is to examine the world and present it to people in a way that helps them better understand it.
Yeah. And it shows like the value of a story now and how it's changed and the value of the truth. And now that every, like all of these celebrities have their own social media accounts and the public has access to their every movement, you would think that the tabloid press would be, you know, on its knees. But it shows the value of getting a private story and how rare a private story is now because we have so much access to Colleen Rooney, that they will, the lengths that they will go to get any sort of private nugget of information is incredible. The stories that Rebecca Vardy was leaking to The Sun were incredibly frivolous, like, oh, she crashed her Honda. You would think in 2020, or 2019, whatever year it was, that, you know, that's kind of inconsequential. We see this stuff all the time on Instagram. But the value of something private that the public doesn't have is huge. And for Rebecca to be able to call Andy Halls or get her agent to call Andy Halls and say, I have a story for you, means that Rebecca can then later call in that favor with The Sun. She has The Sun on her side and she can get a story redacted, changed, edited to her suiting, and that's how valuable that relationship is to The Sun. When you look back at Colleen in 2016, a picture of Colleen Rooney like taking her shopping out of the boot of her Honda would have commanded 20 grand. Those days are gone and the tabloids are champing at the bit for any little nugget they have. So how does someone like Colleen Rooney select who's in her private circle and who has access to her? It must be incredibly stressful.
Completely. But the thing is, I think when you look at why tabloid culture started to decline, you know, the rise of social media, the idea that we are now seeing behind the scenes stuff, and it empowered celebrities to be able to control their narrative a little bit more. And they could get ahead. Like we're seeing, there's an example of in this case where they're at the Russian World Cup. Photographers show up, they're all snapped and papped and whatever. And the girls that Rebecca Vardy is with are trying to get ahead and devalue the photos that the photographers are taking by posting them onto Instagram themselves. And Rebecca Vardy is like, please don't do that, because she's getting the money. She's getting a little kickback from the photographers to be able to get the pictures and the exclusives. But what I think we're becoming more and more aware of at the moment is that that bridging the gap between tabloid culture and celebrities, that social media piece in the middle that gives us more access, is so heavily curated now by the celebrity that it's also fictitious. It's not real. So there's a resurgence, I think, of the ideas of, you know, paparazzi getting behind the scenes, or, you know, other creators behind the scenes, or like looking at kind of gossip pages like Dumois and things like that, that there's a craving for secrets again in the way that was satisfied with the tabloid culture of yesteryear. I do think that the long lens photography, the cruelty, the way that they are mocked and jeered in tabloid media is horrendous though.
Yeah. Like, it's so true. And like, it's no surprise that a lot of celebrities have turned their backs on the tabloids and are trying to undercut them by posting directly on their own accounts. But it's a great point about that craving for secrets that you mentioned. And those accounts like House and Habit, Dumois, Not Skinny But Not Fat, they're all trading on a sort of an analysis of celebrity social media behavior rather than the front end of social media, which is what the celebrity posts on their timeline or on their stories. There is this underbelly of social media and the other behavior that we engage in on social media that we all do every day and probably do more often than our actual public posting, that there's a lot of information from and kind of secrets and who's liking whose post, who's unfollowing who. And that's what those accounts are like. Dumois will say, oh, Drake just unfollowed Rihanna. It's not about what they're posting anymore. It's about their behavior. And this case is a great example of sort of shedding light on that underbelly of social media and how celebrities can utilize it to their advantage. And Colleen has just turned her social media, she's weaponized her social media, weaponized her fan base, used it as a tool. She blocked everyone else except for Rebecca Vardy. She had incredible patience and waited 5 months. She had incredible composure to let these fake stories be printed in the Sun without saying anything. Yeah. She wanted to pin a suspect. But that is how we all use social media every day. And remember when the following tab was deleted by Instagram, we all went mad because now we can't look at who our exes are following in order of when they followed them. You know, that's like, okay. It was very upsetting. So that, like, that's the other side of social media and how we're all using it. We don't always talk about the fact that that's how we're using it. It's not about what you're posting. It's about how you're interacting.
Oh, completely. And like, all social media is a complete tool for people. It is that, you know, armchair detective sleuthing, who's doing what. Remember back in the day, you used to be able to see people's friendships on Facebook, see when they became friends, how often they posted back and forth on each other's walls, when they unfriended each other, did they friend themselves again? It used to be absolutely brilliant seeing all their tagged photos and where they appear with people. But that is so incredibly unhealthy. It's surveillance culture. And I think what, you know, Colleen has fallen into that as well, using social media as a tool, earning her the nickname Agatha Christie, which is fantastic. It is truly genius. And again, using it to set up someone without consequence and to expose Rebecca Vardy's behavior or the behavior associated with Rebecca Vardy's account. I think that we could all fall into the trap of that kind of behavior, and it's dangerous. It's really bad.
It is. And like, on the flip side, as devil's advocate, we've all really enjoyed the case. It does call into question, what does it mean to call someone out on social media when you have a huge fan base? And, you know, Rebecca kind of honed in on that straight away. Now the postman has arrived, so my dog is about to go absolutely insane. Rebecca came back, her original response was, you know, Colleen, I wish you had called me if you thought this. Yeah, there's the delivery man now. He's not going to let me go without a fight. He wants me to come to the door. Thank you. So Rebecca's response when Colleen posted this original accusation was, I wish you had called me if you thought this. I never speak to anyone about you, as various journalists who have asked me to over the years can vouch for. If you thought this was happening, you could have told me and I would have changed my passwords to see if it stopped. I'm not being funny, but I don't need the money. Like, that just sounds like a Lily Allen lyric to me. I'm not being funny, but I don't need the money. What would I gain from selling stories on you? Well, we all know what she would gain from selling stories on you. I liked you a lot and I'm so upset you've chosen to do this, especially when I'm heavily pregnant.
Oh, yeah. Now, here's the thing, right? This suit and everything and what Rebecca Vardy's claiming, I do think the pressure that was put on her, the mocking, is certainly challenging and it's hard to deal with. In defamation, the idea is that you're trying to prove that the claims made against you have lowered your have diminished your reputation in the eyes of reasonable thinking individuals. I did not know who Rebecca Vardy was before this. And after this, she appeared on Dancing on Ice, which is arguably one of the biggest TV shows in the UK, one of those Saturday night family shows or Sunday night, whatever it's on. I would not say that her reputation has been diminished. I think the behavior is not necessarily shocking to a point where you're literally aghast and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe they do it. Almost it's when it all became out in the open, you're kind of more like, of course, this is how it works. Obviously, this is what people do. You know, this is not surprising and not shocking. And I don't think less of Rebecca Vardy for it. I didn't think of Rebecca Vardy at all before it. Yeah. At least now I know who she is. So I think getting called out and getting that shout out on Colleen Rooney's Instagram and Twitter is probably one of the best things that's ever happened to Rebecca Vardy.
Well, she can certainly command more for a story now and command more for access than she could in 2018. And, you know, it's the Barbara Streisand effect that when you bring attention to these things in an effort to squash them, you obviously turn every spotlight on yourself. It's something that the Kardashians have employed. It's turning a bad situation into a publicity opportunity. And, you know, we have to wonder, is this something that Rebecca's engaging in to increase her profile? There is no doubt that at the time when it came out, it was difficult for Jamie Vardy, who Rebecca's husband, who was, you know, there was chants from the crowds anytime he was playing a match, you know, Vardy, Vardy, your wife's a grass or something like that. Uncomfortable.
Very, yeah.
It's uncomfortable. So, you know, there was, people did turn against her. There was a pylon. But when you go out and you go into the world and sort of use stories as a weapon to increase your own profile, that's kind of the trade-off. Is that fair to say? I don't know. You know,
I mean, like you play with fire, you're going to get burnt, really. And she was courting the tabloids too closely. They don't have any loyalty to anyone. They will go after the story. They are sharks. And she was dancing with the devil, playing with fire, other puns or other adages, wherever you can find them. And she has, it has backfired on her, but in a way that I think was inevitable. She was playing too close. And the idea, you know, this case, I mean, Lord, give me the confidence of a woman fighting for her reputation in a defamation case in the wrong, because we know that Rebecca Vardy has been doing this and it has proven that she has done it repeatedly before, that she has lied to the press, all of that. And her defense is basically, oh, I've done it before, but I didn't do it this time. Yeah. So she's really done herself zero favors to come out and do this. I really wish I had the confidence to be able to go out there to the world and be like, I'm restoring my damaged reputation by insisting that I just have changed this time.
It's an incredible like resilience to be able to stand there and look someone in the eye and they say, where did all those messages go, Rebecca? I don't know. It's really odd. I don't know where they went. Rebecca, did you change, like, did you delete messages off your phone? Not sure. Maybe I changed my phone. Can you remember if you changed your phone? No, I can't remember.
Like, I cannot confirm nor deny.
I can't confirm or deny. Like the sheer petulance of it. It's incredible.
It's so incredible to go in. And if I'm being honest, I've had a lot to drink that day. It's like, you should be honest. You're on a stand. You're under oath.
Yeah.
If I'm being honest, I was a little bit tipsy and courted the photographers.
It's so funny to see this wag culture come into the Royal High Court, like this beautifully gilded environment, and to hear that kind of phraseology and some of the quotes that are pulled out as evidence, you know, really bad language about Colleen Rooney, and she's a pigeon and she'll shit on you, and it's messy, messy stuff.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful to see it in that juxtaposition.
It is. It's incredible. I just don't understand why they have done it. Either they've lost their minds or they were never that smart to begin with. And I think, unfortunately, in this case, I think the latter is true, that they will engage with the law to try and get the outcome that they want. But really what's happening is we're all watching on, wincing, cringing. You know, if you took the quotes and the arguments that are happening in that courtroom and you put them on a dance floor in D2 at 2 a.m., that seems like a more appropriate place for it. That's the kind of place you'd expect to hear it. And it just goes back to this point of when you take celebrities and put them in unexpected places, the allure falls entirely, and that can never be restored. We will never not know them for this now. It'd be like seeing Lady Gaga and Lidl in a pair of Crocs. Like, you will just never unsee it.
Oh, it's so true. The only winners here are the tabloids, because they're getting so much content off the back of this. It started in the tabloids and it will end in the tabloids. And that's kind of reminiscent of the Meghan Markle case against the Daily Mail, against the Associated Press. They threw so much cash at that case. They lost in the end and they came back for an appeal. They kept throwing more cash at it. And the content that they were getting out of that was actually worth the cash, because it was turning into such a revenue generator. And that's kind of the tricky thing. If you're Meghan Markle and you're taking these guys to court because you're saying this is not right, they shouldn't have published this, the trade-off is, you know, that they're actually enjoying it, and they feed off these situations, and they get content out of them, and they get more attention, and they win at the end of the day. They lost that court case against Meghan Markle and they weren't granted an appeal. But look at all the content they got out of it. They published an apology to Meghan on what they call Boxing Day, which is typically a very slow news day. No one's reading the papers. They totally buried it. Petty behaviour from the Daily Mail. But they won, you know, they won in the end. And in the process of that case, it came out like all sort of kind of things that Meghan Markle wouldn't have liked to be in the press, like that they sold their story to Finding Freedom, that biography about them, that they worked very closely with the author, and all the sources close to them were actually them. And it kind of shed a light again on how this all works. And, you know, celebrities have to be complicit in this ecosystem in order to shape their narrative with the press. So, you know, Meghan, that was a huge trade-off for Meghan. All of that came out. She risked more family stuff coming out. And, you know, I there's so many similarities for me between Colleen and Meghan, except that maybe Meghan does court the press probably more enthusiastically than Colleen Rooney. But again, it brings up the question, like, without getting too Pollyanna on it, when you look at the Amber Heard situation and the Rebecca Vardy situation, is there a type of woman that we're more likely to believe and a type of woman that we're more likely not to believe?
That's it. That's the thing that I think is interesting, because when you look at the Amber Heard and Johnny Depp case, it is out of context bizarre that we are all, well, I don't have a side. I think that they are both exposing extremely toxic behavior, and I don't think either of them will ever work again. But the majority of people and the majority of viewers seem to be very much supporting Johnny Depp and going against Amber Heard. And that is because she has exposed herself to has shown a lot of untruths on the stand. It has, you know, it's been very, very clear that her behavior was also extremely toxic, extremely abusive towards Johnny. But he is not denying abusive behavior. He is not denying that at times he got physical, drug abuse, alcohol abuse, and then very heated and dangerous situations that the two engaged in entered themselves into. Why it is blowing my mind that we are all looking on as Amber as the bad guy. I think that's the thing with the law, and when it gets to court, is that there has to be, for a defamation case to close, there has to be a winner and a loser. And that is a judge or jury deciding that this person is more right than this person, or this person is telling the truth and this is the liar. And that's what we're looking for. And what it's really looking like is that Amber Heard seems to be the one who's telling the most lies in that case. And over here, Rebecca Vardy is a liar, but she's not going to, you know, she's going to win this case or whatever else. And that need to see things as black and white and good versus bad and who was right and who was wrong is what we need, how we need to process the world. That is what we do all the time. We have to have a sense of good versus evil because it makes processing the world easier. It makes it easier to identify danger and what to avoid and what to embrace and all that kind of stuff. But here in both of these cases, there isn't a black and white. There isn't. It's so messy. It's so gray. We're, you know, it's just so uncomfortable. And I think that's why it's so uncomfortable to watch, is because it is really messy, but we know one person has to win and we're not going to feel good about it either way in either case, because it doesn't feel right. And for me, I think on the Agatha Christie trial, it's exposing these people that we looked onto and sort of admired, not admired in the traditional sense, but definitely wondered about or queried. It's exposing them to be very human and to be very flawed and to be kind of gas. And it's a sort of funny one. But in the Amber Heard and Johnny Depp case, it's exposing them to be monsters. Like, it's not that they're human. They are, you know, it's really dark and messy over there. I think that celebrities just belong on our TVs. We're at a place where we can fill in the blanks and create the stories about them, you know, rather than having to witness this. Just cringe for Agatha and then hideousness for Johnny and Amber.
Yeah. And in that way, like, the judgment at the end becomes inconsequential, really, who wins and loses because of what comes out in the process of the actual case being tried. And that's what you remember, is the stories. And for a lot of people, the touch point and where they're getting their information is social media, and it's sound bites and quotes. In the UK, we don't allow filming of these trials, but it's the little quotes and the little sound bites and the Rebecca Vardy didn't understand the Davy Jones locker remark, or the text that Rebecca Vardy sent in 2014 to Caroline Watt. And those are the bits that we remember, and the judgment will be inconsequential. In the UK, the difference between the UK and Irish defamation cases is that in the UK, it's judged by a judge. In Ireland, there is a jury. So in the UK, a judge obviously has a lot of experience of these cases, and the awards tend to be a lot less, like we saw in the Katie Hopkins trial. She had to pay a food blogger 24 grand, which isn't going to hurt Katie Hopkins. I mean, it's an expensive day, but it's not going to hurt her, you know, whereas in Ireland, because our defamation cases are judged by a jury, our awards tend to be inappropriately big because a jury doesn't have legal experience. They're not familiar with what's an appropriate award or what's not. We've seen some huge awards recently, like millions and millions and millions. But the judgment in the UK on this Agatha Christie trial has probably been made because of all that pre-trial documentation. The judge gets a read on it. The end result won't matter. I guarantee you, in 5 years' time, none of us will remember who won. We'll just remember the absolute gas of what was said, what came out. All the DMs,
the messages back and forth, and the ones, considering they're the ones that made it in, the ones that were accidentally deleted in the phone that dropped to the bottom of the sea in Davy Jones' locker, they must be pretty goddamn bad if we're seeing the pigeon shit messages in the courtroom. And like, she must just understand or had gotten really good legal advice that has said, you know, this Rebecca, that she will win this case and that she will come out strong, because she doesn't seem to be trying too hard to defend her innocence. She's not claiming that she, you know, would never behave like this. I just don't understand why they have done this and why they've put themselves in this position. Like you said, no winners or losers. We will not remember, but we are all thinking less of them now. They have damaged their reputations themselves perfectly fine.
Absolutely. And like Rebecca said it in her first response to Colleen, I'm not being funny. I don't need the money. Why would I sell stories? Now she's in court suing her. And again, it's not about the money. She's probably going to get a pound and she's going to spend insane amounts on legal fees. It's just not about the money. What is it about? It's about the ego, the reputation, the lengths you'll go to protect the reputation. But for me, beyond that, Rebecca has accepted to a certain level that there's stuff going to come out about her that is doesn't paint her in the best light. She's willing to sacrifice her reputation for pettiness. Yeah. Like it's I want to win against Colleen Rooney. Colleen Rooney is a pigeon. Colleen Rooney is a nasty B word. I can't remember if we curse on this podcast or not.
B word.
She's a B word. You know, it's she has a little vengeance now against Colleen Rooney. And that's something that people in this circle hold on to and plant as a seed and water every day until it grows into a tree. And they are vengeful and petty. And both of these women, they just want to win, you know,
yeah,
for their own pettiness.
It's like EastEnders meets Mean Girls. And I am so here for it.
It is. That is exactly what it is. Okay, so look, we'll have a result next week. We'll see what happens. No one will care. All we'll remember is the fantastic quotes and sound bites that we've got from it, and we'll all move on.
Well, thank you, Megan.
Cassie's just trying to wrap it up because she's in Rome and she's going to go and see the Colosseum now, are you?
I'm going to go see the Colosseum. I'm going to have a little pastry and a coffee before I go.
Fabulous. Enjoy. Okay, we'll see you. We'll catch you when we see you.
Could be soon, could be long time. Right. Catch you when we see you.